The Athletic.
This is Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, Chelsea earn a point the harder way in the Champions League, the briefest of international roundups, midterm reports, and more. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Hey listener, it is international break time for the men's side, but SOC stops for nobody. As ever, there's plenty to discuss in the world of London's first and finest. Joining me, Matt Davis-Adams, to talk through it all are Super Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt.
Hello, Sam. Also with us, The Athletic's man in the know on Chelsea and all, slash some other stuff, Dominic Fifield. Hi, Dom.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good. So last time we heard from you, Dom, you were competing with the PA system in Turin. Tell us a little bit about how the experience of travelling abroad to cover Chelsea in these particular times was. I'm imagining there was a fair bit of paperwork.
Yeah, a lot of tests, a lot of forms to fill in. But I don't suppose that's any different for anybody who's travelling abroad at the moment. From the UK, they weren't more because I was attending a Champions League game on the continent. The actual match day experience was pretty much normal until the post match scenes, and that really was something else. I mean, I don't know, our listeners will be aware, but in normal circumstances, at the end of a game, there's a press conference in a media theatre. The manager, maybe a player if you're lucky, sits on the top table and his questions are fired at him from the floor. During COVID times, that was, and at Chelsea in particular, that's been replaced by a Zoom conference, which they're not ideal. The ones at Stamford Bridge, you sit in your seats and log on to Zoom and you compete with the lawnmowers that are going over the surface out on the pitch at the time. It's all a bit farcical and you can barely hear what's going on. But Juventus took that to new levels, in as much as at the end of the game, we stayed in our seats high up in the press box, right at the top of the stand. They fixed one television camera upon us and we were beamed onto the jumbotrons at either end of the stadium. So they're actually up on the big screens within the ground. And one bloke turned up with what looked like a very, very long selfie stick with a microphone at the end of it. And he sort of dangled that vaguely in the direction of people who raised their hands to ask a question. And our questions were broadcast over the speakers on the screens in the stadium. And the responses were, except that for some reason, the Thomas Tuchel's response is that they turned the volume down. So you could just about vaguely make out what he was saying, but it was really, really quite low and didn't make for transcribing the press conference, make it particularly easy. I've never seen that before. I've never seen us beamed onto the big screens within the ground, and there were punters still in the stadium at that point. They must have been very amused by what was going on, but that wasn't normal, and that was the sort of the one indication that these are still quite odd times.
Hopefully it'll get more normal as the Champions League progresses, but who knows with the way the world is. Right, later we'll assess Chelsea's individual performances thus far and hear from Anne-Marie Batson on Chelsea's women's team. But first, a look back on the midweek international with Chelsea presence. Right, so on Wednesday night, four Chelsea players were involved in the Nations League semi-final between Spain and Italy. Marcos Alonso and Cesar Azpilicueta started for Spain. Jorginho and on-loan Emerson lined up for Italy. It was Spain who won 2-1 to end Italy's 37-match unbeaten streak. Okay, next we'll shift our focus to the women's team who kicked off their Champions League campaign on Wednesday night.
Harder into the box again for Chelsea. Could this be it?
Never have we played a Wolfsburg team where we've had 10 corners to their zero. We've had 33 entries into their penalty box, 17 shots, 62% possession, dominance in most areas of the pitch, clear-cut chances, and yet we're only walking away with a point.
Great comeback from us today. We take 1 point with us and then we go again. Let's go.
Chelsea and Wolfsburg put on a thriller at King's Meadow as the pair began their journey in the first ever Women's Champions League group stage game for both. It finished 3-3 in the Group A encounter after Pernille Harder had scored a stoppage time equaliser against her old club. Joining us now to discuss the game is journalist and broadcaster Anne-Marie Batson.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing this fine Thursday morning?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Before we get to the match itself, because there's loads to talk about there, Magda Eriksson, in her pre-match press conference, said that the introduction of the group stages is a massive step for women's football. Why do you think that is?
I think there's been a lot of discussions about how to move the UEFA Women's Champions League forward over the last few years to get more eyes on it. I think because there was so much interest in last season, particularly with the final with Chelsea and Barcelona. And I think the opportunity now that, you know, a certain YouTube channel will be showing the matches as well. I think they needed to show that the group stages could be competitive. And thankfully, we've been absolutely treated to that over the last few days or so with some absolutely cracking encounters. And it also makes it competitive for the players as well, because this is top, top level football now. And you saw that last night and you've seen that in other group stages matches as well. This is on another level. So I think it's an opportunity to get more eyes on the game. You saw that last night when I was watching the game, just to see how many people were watching. It was a fair few as well. So, yeah, I think it's just raising the bar when it comes to European football competition.
In terms of the match itself, what the bejesus was going on with the Chelsea defending here? I mean, they're usually so good at the back and every goal was avoidable, it seemed to me.
Yes, and no doubt there would have been some interesting conversations at full time in the changing room, and in the centre of that was, goodness bless her, Anne Katrin Berger. I have no idea. I was watching the first mistake, I couldn't believe it, and then the second mistake, I was thinking, it's communication, something's broken down here. And I'm really surprised, because with one thing that you get with Chelsea is a strong back line. However, if you look at their last few matches that they've played in the WSL and it in the FA Cup, not necessarily, but definitely in the WSL, they have conceded goals, which I'm slightly worried about, because the one thing that Chelsea are renowned for is their defensive capability. And I just wonder, going to a back three, I know it was a necessity because of injury, but I just wonder if that's working in the way that that you would expect from Chelsea, because it has worked in some cases, but it didn't when it was, you know, against Arsenal. They didn't, they weren't able to be strong enough with that back line. They conceded a goal against Brighton as well. We saw last night against Wolfsburg. I don't know. There's something not clicking there. And that's not what you expect from Chelsea. You expect them to hold the back line really, really strong, pretty much impenetrable. And then with the forward line, they just keep attacking you and attacking you with threats on goal. Quite unusual, I would say, Matt.
Anne-Marie, I've seen the defensive lapses, as surprised as you guys. Just having control were Chelsea other than that? Because having watched the extended highlights, looked like they still had the majority of the ball and the chances.
The first 10-15 minutes, it was all about Chelsea. Wolfsburg barely got a sniff on the ball. If you looked at the possession stats in the first 15 minutes or so, I think Wolfsburg was like 20%, really low. And then Chelsea were 80%. The goal goes in from Sanka, all good. And then it all kind of unravels pretty quickly after the mistake. It was like Chelsea lost their composure. They played much, much better in the second half. Despite being down by 2-1, they really stepped it up a gear. They got the ball back. And I think what made the change is what they adopted those first few minutes of the first half. They controlled the tempo. They controlled the pace. You know, it was literally one, two touches. Definitely down on the left with Gura Wrighton, who I love watching her. She's a fast woman when she runs with the ball, and her link-up play as well. They kept working it on that side. And then when the goal started to go in from Wolfsburg, they kind of lost their composure a little bit with Chelsea. So once they got that back, and once they held on to the ball, and they were passing it quicker as well, making use of the wide areas as well as going down occasionally down the middle where they were getting a lot of blockage from Wolfsburg, I think that's when they got a lot better. And then the attempts, it was an attempt. I did write down the figures from last night because there was quite a few. I think it was literally like 17 attempts on goal, 7 on target. Once it all clicked into place better in the second half, you saw the ball flowing a bit better, more communication. And then thankfully, Pernille Harder got that goal in extra time.
I'm guessing, obviously, they're disappointed not to have won the first game, but the one thing you don't want to do is lose it. I'm guessing they'll still be fairly confident of getting through the group without too much difficulty, Juventus and Servette, the other sides in it.
Absolutely. And I think the one thing that it showed last night is that when Chelsea are down and out, they'll come back at you. And I think that will give them confidence going into the next few games. Yes, they would have liked to have won it. Of course, they're all competitors at the end of the day. I think it was a real knock for them, a real shock to the system when at halftime they were down by 2-1. I wasn't certainly expecting that result, to be honest. But I think it gave them that jolt that they needed. So they know now if things are not going to plan, what they can do to make it right. And it was only because of those couple of mistakes that led to the goal. But other than that, they were pretty much spot on. And I think it's understanding now that you've got to be ruthless with your chances. As soon as you're on target, take the shot, because you're not going to get that many opportunity as you move further into the competition. So a couple of mistakes, yes. They'll have some homework, yes. But it will give them confidence now that they can come back if they are a few goals down.
And in terms of the WSL, they've got Leicester on Sunday. Leicester have lost all four of their opening games. I know you're covering this one for Chelsea TV. Chelsea will expect to win it. Do you think we might see Maren Mjelde at some point? She was on the bench on Wednesday night, and given the defensive issues we've talked about, they'll obviously want her back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I suspect so. But it's a case of easing her back into the game, because that was a pretty serious injury that she had. And also, you've got the dynamic at the moment between the current back three. It is working to a point, because they are conceding goals here and there, but it is working. So I think it's just a case of easing Mjelde back into the team, because she's a key component of the first 11 for sure. But yes, against Leicester, I'm pretty much expecting that to be not much getting out the second gear. Sorry, Leicester fans, for that one. For Chelsea, I mean, they're on a good run now, that is for sure. They've had to play a couple of away games from home in the last few weeks or so, back at home for Wolfsburg, home again on Sunday against Leicester. I think that will just be a run-of-the-mill result for Chelsea.
Let's hope so. Well, enjoy the game, Anne-Marie. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Anne-Marie Batson there. Follow her on Twitter, at Anne-Marie Batson, all one word. Okay, next today, let's hand out some completely arbitrary and meaningless ratings.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Given there's no men's game to look ahead to, we thought we'd assess how the squad have performed thus far and hand them out some grades. Think of it as a clunky allusion to a school report, listener. We'll carry this on Monday. For today, we're going to look at keepers and defenders. The criteria here, simply anyone who's made a first team appearance so far. So I've split the players up between the chaps. Dom, you can go first with Edouard Mendy. What grade are you giving, and what's the top line of his report?
Oh, look, he's an A. I think he's been outstanding still. He's really, I know that there are periods where he's been absent with a minor injury, but generally speaking, he's very much established as Chelsea's number one. And he looks increasingly like a bargain signing from Rennes last season. I think there was a bit of skepticism when he arrived in the country. He was a player that maybe hadn't illuminated the French league that much over his time there, but he came highly recommended by Petr Cech, and I think everything he's done so far has been absolutely outstanding. He looks a better player now than when he arrived. He's got the confidence of his teammates. He's top quality.
What about Kepa then, Sam? Is the Chelsea goalkeeping situation like a packet of Duracell batteries? Is it double A stuff?
Oh, unquestionably. I can't believe I'm saying this. maybe an A minus. I can't give an A star to a sub goalie, in essence. I can't do that at any stage of life. But he's been, I suppose, just such a valued member of the squad now to come in against Villarreal, perform heroics. Away at Tottenham, big save from Son, wasn't it, in the first half, I think, when the game was on a bit of a knife edge. And then against Villa, didn't put a foot wrong. Big save from Archer in the first half, couldn't do anything about the goal, and then saved the penalty. So he's been brilliant. And I think going to the next stage of the season with complete confidence that if Mendy has to miss a game, then he's really confident and he wants to be at the club, which has probably not always been the case.
Yeah, I think he'll be Chelsea's first choice keeper next season. That's my early big shout. Let's move on to the defence then. Sam, while you're there, Reece James, somebody who I think will probably get a high grade as well.
Well, I've only got him down as a B+, and that's purely because he's only completed the 90 minutes, had the sending off and obviously had the injury. But there's been some brilliant performances in there as well. I thought he was exceptional in that League Cup game against Villa and the Arsenal game. Obviously a goal and an assist. Still want more from him. You know, having seen him create so many goals, score so many goals freely, you know, throughout the under-18s and the under-23s. Yes, he's shown us that in the first team, but I still think there's more to come from him. I'd like to see him given a go in midfield at some point as well. I think he's that good. But yeah, just not scraping into A territory just purely because he's not played that many minutes.
All right, we'll see if he does better for the English water polo team after that jape that Thomas Tuchel made last week. And what about Cesar Azpilicueta, Dom, the Chelsea club captain, club icon, club legend? How's he done so far?
Well, if you'd asked him that question a couple of weeks ago, I think it would have been an A, you know, a veteran player that was, you know exactly what you're going to get from, very consistent, can obviously fill in a couple of positions, whether he's playing the right-sided centre-half or right wing-back. I think, though, that those two games against City and Juventus, I don't want to say exposed him, because I think it was asking an awful lot of a player of his age to spend most of those two matches playing right wing back. I mean, he obviously switched there when James went off against City, and then got hauled off himself in Turin just after the hour mark as one of those three substitutions. I think that's a little reminder as to why Thomas Tuchel in particular was so keen to sign Ashraf Hakimi in the summer, particularly given that he sees Reece James as someone who can operate in central defence on the right side of the three, as well as right wing back and potentially in midfield. I still think that Azpilicueta is a stalwart. He's someone that Chelsea can rely upon. I'm not sure he can necessarily play the majority of two games at right wing back within 4 days of each other against such high calibre opposition.
Yeah, it was a surprise to see him play there against Southampton as well after that. Tony Rudiger, Sam, he's a man in demand, depending on which paper you read. We don't know if he's going to be a Chelsea player next season, but for this season, he's a stick on every time Thomas Tuchel names a team for an important game. How are you grading him?
I've got him as an A-. Just Mr. Consistent, isn't he? And I think during his first season, handful of games, I thought there was always a mistake there, but he seems to have just ironed that out completely, which is fantastic. I don't think, as Dom just spoke of there, and I'm going to come on to it in a minute, but with the Juventus and the Manchester City drop off, I don't think his standards have dropped as alarmingly as some of his colleagues during those couple of games. So I thought his performances were still there, really. Got the goal against Spurs. I don't want to see him shooting from 25 yards, 30 yards. That has got to go. But other than that, he's been remarkably consistent. And as you say, Matt, across the maybe Lukaku aside, he is a shoo-in to play every game, you know, because he's so reliable and because there's not the competition probably in his role. I think Christensen and Chaloba, Silva at a push could all play on the left-hand side. But, you know, he's made that position his own.
What about Thiago Silva, Dom? Sort of in and out, although he started, you know, important games against Juventus, scored against Spurs, actually, and a bit like Azpilicueta, kind of reliable, experienced old head.
Yeah, I think you know what you're going to get. I don't think he can do it twice in 4 days necessarily, but I think the selection has been a reflection of that. They gave him time to get into the rhythm of the season. He didn't feature against Palace and Arsenal in that first batch of games ahead of the international break. Came on against Liverpool and did a good job in that second half. Let's be honest. I mean, in the rear guard action with Reece James having just been sent off just before half time and did superbly well. He was excellent against Tottenham, and I think you can rely upon him, but almost in isolated games. So I mean, grading him is difficult because when he's on the pitch, he's right up there. He's an A, but in terms of you know, how much you're going to get out of him. You're probably looking more like a BB plus, because you know that you can't rely upon him twice, three times a week.
Yeah, and what we can't take into account here is the influence at the training ground, yeah, and the influence on other players. I think one of those, Sam, would be Andreas Christensen, who feels like he's come on leaps and bounds in the last kind of 12 to 18 months, whether that's related to Thiago Silva or not.
Yeah, definitely a perfect person to keep him on his toes and speak to him about little intricacies of what that position is, I suppose. Yeah, although Christensen's got great experience now, and I've always loved him and always felt that he could be the heir to John Terry's throne, really, in the way that he's been moulded at Chelsea and had the successful loans. You know, he's the great example of that, how it can work. And that said, I mean, he had that outstanding performance at Anfield. I thought he was brilliant on that day, but I think there has been a drop off. And I think against Juve, that's as poor as I've seen him. And I don't know if it got highlighted, but I thought Chiesa gave him such a hard time. And I think that's more about the sharpness of him, you know, how direct he is. And he really got them up the pitch. And I thought Christensen struggled with that, maybe just his mobility. So that probably was what led to him being left out against Southampton. So I've only got him at a B+, but that's quite harsh, because when he has been good, he's been really good.
Hopefully that'll motivate him to get up to an A by the end of the season.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
he's a regular listener, I'm not told. A contender for top of the class next, I think, Dom, for you, Trevor Chalobah. He's come from absolutely nowhere, and he might be head boy by the end of the year.
He's done brilliantly well. He seized his opportunity, an unexpected one, admittedly. But I mean, 120 minutes against Villarreal in the Super Cup, 390 minutes appearances in the Premier League, in which Chelsea have scored three goals on each occasion and won the games. He's been up. I mean, he was a surprise when he came on in midfield against Juventus last week. But he can obviously do that role, and Tuchel is has recognised as much, although he does see him very much as a centre half. I just think it's great to see someone new and fresh coming through from the academy and into that first team, a player that we didn't expect, a player that spent the last few years out on loan. I mean, I don't think he would have envisaged, having played such a major part in this early part of the season, you know, while he was out on loan at Lorient last season in Ligue 1, you know, lower mid-table, not really going anywhere. Huddersfield and Ipswich before that. I think it's a great story, and it's a much needed little reminder that there is quality in those vast numbers of players at Chelsea, whether they be academy graduates or those, you know, lads who have been there for a long time and been forgotten. And when they get their chance, they invariably demonstrate the pedigree they have.
Yeah, it's a useful signpost for Neil Bath and co as well, isn't it? A more recent example of staying in the Chelsea academy can actually lead you to get into the first team, even if you have to take a rather circular route to do so. Sam, try and keep this one under 10 minutes if you can, please. Malang Sarr.
I've actually got him as a B, because I thought he did all right in that game against Villa. You know, not as composed and as confident as like Reece James and Chalobah, because I thought those two were exceptional, but you know, they've got more experience and were flying really going into that game. So, you know, I've looked at the stats from that game and there's nothing really jumping out at me to suggest that he was completely off the boil. You know, his pass completion was just below those other two chaps I've just mentioned. There was interceptions and blocks and what have you. He looked a little bit edgy at times, but you know, I don't think we can be too tough on him. So, yeah, I don't expect him to come in for Rudiger too often. I think there'll probably be a reshuffle there rather than, you know, handing him his Premier League bow, but he can have a B.
Yeah, we'll wonder if we'll see him again, maybe. Ben Chilwell, Dom, it's been a really difficult start to the season for him. Signs that things might be getting a bit better. I wonder if he could have done without being in the England squad and had a couple of weeks at Cobham with Marcus Alonso away to try and re-establish himself at Chelsea. How are you grading him?
It's a really tricky one, because it appears as if he's on his way back now. That 90 minutes against Southampton, rewarded with a goal, very timely. The 45 he got in Turin as well. That, I mean, other than the 7 minutes against Zenit St. Petersburg, that is it since the Champions League final for him. But it just felt to me, and I know Sam will be talking about Marcus Alonso in a minute, it felt to me that there was we'd always reached that ceiling that we always get to with Marcus Alonso. And then actually Ben Chilwell stepped in and has now hopefully taken his chance to show that he deserves to be in this team and merits being in this team. There's a lot of competition. Bear in mind, in that Nations League game, Italy-Spain, I mean, both left-backs on show that night were Chelsea players. Admittedly, Emerson's out on loan. But it's there is competition for places there. And Marcus Alonso has done well to justify his selection up to now. And Chilwell obviously needed time to get back into a rhythm of things and to get over the disappointment of the summer. But I do think he offers a bit more defensive surety than Alonso. I don't think he'll go quite as AWOL as Alonso does at times defensively. And he's got a goal threat in him. He's a good delivery from the flank, a vicious shot, which he does fire off quite often. And I'd like to hope now that he gets a proper run in the team to demonstrate what he can do. Yeah, the last few weeks have been good. I mean, there was a League Cup tie. He played 90 minutes against Villa as well, didn't he? So, I mean, he is stepping it up slowly, and hopefully now I actually think that he'll benefit from a bit of time with England and training with a competitive group and trying to re-establish himself at that level, because that will do his self-esteem no harm at all.
Yeah, give him a couple of minutes, Gareth, please. What about Alonso then, Sam, as we finish this off? Probably would have got a higher grade up until, what, a fortnight ago, and it's just dipped a bit for him?
Yeah, definitely. I've got him as a B, and I mean, some big moments, wasn't there, early part of the season, the goal against Palace and obviously the corner, was it, or free kick for Silva's header at Spurs. So he's always, capable of providing them, but that's not enough for me to keep you in the team, being a better dead ball striker than Ben Chilwell. I don't think he puts in particularly good deliveries from wide. It's not like Reece James, where he's got that ridiculous lack of backlift where he can just whip it in around the defender. Alonso doesn't really possess that. And Chilwell, I think he had 4 attempts against Southampton and was getting in the box a lot more than Alonso has been recently, it felt to me anyway. And I think that's a big part of Alonso's game. So, yeah, he had a really good start to the season, but I think the time is now for Chilwell to get his run. I mean, Thomas Tuchel spoke about favouring Alonso over Chilwell previously because of his size and his physique, and I think that may come into the picture for some games, but I think Chilwell deserves his run now because Alonso's drop-off, whether he's a bit leggy, has been quite alarming, I would say, in the last couple of big games.
Very good. Right, we'll do midfielders and strikers on Monday. Next today, though, it's quiz time.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Maybe you go for a run, or take a nap, or read a book. Maybe you just luxuriate in doing absolutely nothing. Many of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your daily schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a licensed therapist. And if things don't click, you can switch to someone new at any time with no additional charge. BetterHelp provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise with no referral needed. And because you listen to this podcast, you can get 10% off your first month of online therapy by heading to betterhelp.com/cobham. That's BETERHELP.com/cobham. COBHAM.
So good news, listener.
Genuinely had forgotten about this.
Good news for you, listener. I'm told this is going down quite well, but not with the participants. We're just going to do questions related to the season so far today. I think these are actually a little bit easier than they have been. We'll find out.
No excuses now.
It's 3 questions apiece. Parkin and Fifield. Tête-à-tête. Go go one by one. Dom, you can go first. Chelsea won the Super Cup back in August, beating Villarreal on penalties. But which Blues player missed the first spot kick of the shootout?
Oh, why wasn't I awake?
Sam scratching his chin in anticipation of a stealing opportunity.
No, I've not got a clue.
Who missed the first penalty? Who would have taken the first penalty?
Jorginho? It's a good shout. It's not right, though. It was Kai Havertz, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Liam would have got
that. I don't
that.
Remember that either.
Definitely would have got that. My brain works in the last 24 hours, Matt. You know, I don't go back longer than that.
You've got 24 right. hours out of your brain.
Focus on the now.
You're going to struggle with this one then, Sam. Who scored the first Premier League goal of the season for Chelsea?
Oh, I can do that one. It's my lot.
Yeah, I know. That's why.
Oh, don't say that. Well, no, one of the scorers. Oh, he got the first. Against Palace, yeah?
Yeah. 3-0. Yeah, classic stalling, yeah, yeah.
At Stamford Bridge, I can only see the free...
Chelsea wearing blue, yeah.
I can only see the free kick I've mentioned, Alonso.
Yeah. It's correct!
Oh! I thought there was one before that.
No.
I'll take it.
It just felt like that.
Right, Dom, here's your second question. The last few weeks have seen the surprise re-emergence of Ross Barkley. He's got a new squad number this season. What is it and who was its previous occupant? Half a point for each.
It's 18.
Correct.
Did he not swap with Mateo Kovacic?
He did not.
Ah, damn it.
It was Olivier Giroud who previously had the number 18. Kovacic was 17, I'm fairly sure about that. I'm just waiting for a nod from producer Lucy because she's bound to know. She's shrugging
the
shoulders.
That's not a nod, Matt.
Okay. Don't tweet me if it's not 17, but that's what I thought it was. Okay, right. So you've got a point there, Dom. So it's 1-1. Sam, bit of pressure on you, therefore, for question two. Oh, this is a horrible question. You'll never get it right. I'm sorry. I don't know why.
How many Instagram followers?
It's nearly as random. Romelu Lukaku's first two Chelsea goals came against Arsenal and Aston Villa. They were both scored in the same minute. Name that minute.
Ooh.
No idea, but I will go for... The Villa goal was... what was that like? That was the one over the top, the Kovacic pass, was it?
Yeah. Pass of the season, yeah.
Arsenal, they were battering them. It's not before the 20th. It is the 23rd minute.
Dom, would you like to steal?
I think it was sooner than that. I think it was an earlier one, but sort of around the quarter hour mark. I'll go 14.
Oh, it's so close, but I can't give it you. It was 15. It wasn't around the quarter hour mark, it was on it. So
this quiz is ridiculous.
Still 1-1. This is your final question, Dom. Confirmation, by the way, that Kovacic used to be 17. Barkley was 8 last season. He swapped it so that Kovacic could have that, which was kind of him. Anyway, Dom, here's your final question. Tammy Abraham left Chelsea just after the Super Cup, which we mentioned back in your first question. How many goals has Abraham scored for Roma so far?
Oh, I know he's hit the woodwork about 45 times.
I'll have the steal here for the away point, if that's going. Oi. Oh, he's going to get it.
Four?
Oh. Four is right. Yeah, correct.
Is that right?
Yeah. Two of them are in the Conference League, so really they should be half goals. But yeah. Okay, so it's what? 2-1. So, Sam, you've got to get this right.
I think technically it's 1.5, Matt. I didn't get the number.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So
you can win it.
So Sam, you can win here if you get this. You're not going to, though. No, you might. This is the random social media question. You and I have both railed against the banality of footballers' post-match tweets unsuccessfully for some time now. In that spirit, which Chelsea player posted the following after last weekend's win against Southampton? All caps, perfect reaction, 2 exclamation marks, lowercase. Have a great weekend, Blues, flames emoji, blue heart emoji. Classic stuff. Who wrote it? Could be literally any footballer who plays for a team in blue.
In capitals, yeah.
I'll read it again. All caps to start with. Perfect reaction to exclamation marks. Then back to lowercase. Have a great weekend, Blues. Flames emoji, blue heart emoji. It's had 28,500 likes.
It could be any one of them. Perfect reaction.
80 people saw fit to quote tweet it.
I will go for Hudson-Odoi.
Oh, he's got it. That's unbelievable.
Wow. Plot that one out the ether. That's amazing.
It was at Caltech 10 with his 581,000 followers. Well done, Callum. Would you have done that, Sam?
Sam, when you scored the winner in a big game for Swindon or someone, would you have taken to
no
social media and said thanks, Robbins?
No, I would have tried to have been as honest as I could have been, Dom, probably like in the post-match interviews. And, you know, if it was a middle of the table.
Did you enjoy them? Did you enjoy the post-match?
I did, yeah, I did. And if it was a middle of the table scrap, I'd have said, you know, it would have been all about me and my hat trick and how I was going to celebrate that night. I wouldn't have thanked my teammates and the supporters. I would have said, there's another match ball for me. I think it's all nonsense, to be honest, Dom. But I've said to Matt a few times, if you're going to be appreciative of the fan support, at least be a bit more detailed and say which songs in particular you enjoyed, or, you know, which jibes went against the away supporters was the one that tickled you the most, you know?
I think we've got to give a shout out to John McGinn here, haven't we? Who pretty much won this for Footballers Twitter last week. Nice to make my at question of sport debut. Scoreline doesn't reflect the game. Fans were class as always. That's how you do football Twitter. Aston Villa's John McGinn. We will have another quiz next Thursday, I'm afraid, gents. Before we go for today, though, Simon's got a nice piece up on the rebirth of Ruben Loftus-Cheek on The Athletic at the moment. What have you been working on, Dom?
I've got a piece going up about which looks at Mikel John Obi's transfer to Chelsea from Lyn Oslo back in 2005. But rather than going over all the old ground, and that was obviously a very controversial move, there were three other Nigerian players that spent a lot of time on trial at Chelsea around that period alongside Mikel. And they also went to Lyn Oslo. And I've done an interview with one of them, Emmanuel Sarki, who's currently playing in the lower leagues in Poland. And it's really the piece, although it does go over the Mikel saga, it addresses what happened to the other three Nigerian players who were on the who were attempting to secure moves to Chelsea at the time.
That'd be interesting. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. Sam, you'll be on Sky providing the wit and wisdom in their coverage of Forest Green Rovers against Swindon this weekend. You looking forward to seeing the former Chelsea youth product Dion Comroy again?
Oh, I love Dion Comroy. Yeah, he's brilliant. If you want to see a cultured centre-half, ex-Chelsea, applying his trade in the EFL, he's your guy. Lovely range of passing. Yeah, so off to Nailsworth, isn't it? So hoping that A, I don't run out of petrol, and B, my girlfriend doesn't go into labour.
But are you looking forward to the vegan food on offer? That's the main thing.
Vegan food's good. Yeah. I'm not just saying it. I'm going all Callum Hudson-Odoi here, aren't I? But I would say it's some of the best food in the Football League. Thank you, Dale Vince. Flames emojis.
Right, we want to see a picture.
I want specifics, Sam. I want to know what pies in particular.
Yeah. Hummus was first class. Support from the catering staff was unreal. Hashtag falafel, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, magnificent. All right, well, many thanks to Dom and to Sam for their company today, and to Lucy for putting it all together. Mainly to you, though, listener. We'll see you again back here on Monday. Until then, have a good weekend. Bye for now.
The Athletic.